The term aviation was first coined in 1863 and stems from the Latin avis, meaning bird, with the suffix "-ation," meaning action or progress. Experiments with gliders provided the groundwork for heavier-than-air craft, and by the early 20th century, advances in engine technology and aerodynamics made controlled, powered flight possible for the first time in modern times. The modern airplane, with its characteristic tail, was established in 1909, and from then on, the history of the airplane became tied to the development of more and more powerful engines. The first great ships of air were the rigid balloons pioneered by Ferdinand von Zeppelin, which soon dominated long-distance flight until the 1930s, when new and immensely powerful jet engines revolutionized both air travel and military aviation. Of course, the winged craft was not the only design that was being tested, with alternative aircraft designs tested, some very successfully, although not always publicly.
February 25th marks an anniversary that few remember and some refuse to forget. In 1942, an unidentified object was seen hovering over the California coast. The military, poised to defend the coast from a foreign invasion, took aim and fired. The event, called the Battle of Los Angeles, made headlines. What was in the sky and where did it go? Filmmaker and UFO researcher Jose Escamilla highlights the events of that night.
What happened at 2 in the morning, some objects entered into our airspace. One of them hovered right over Santa Monica and Culver City. Some described it as a round, dome-shaped object that was about 100 feet diameter. Some of them said it was a little smaller. But the unique thing about it is the military, the Army, started firing at this thing for about an hour, hour and a half, but they could not bring the object down.
Within 24 hours, the Department of War sent a memo to the president, detailing the incident as possibly unidentified airplanes flying at various speeds and declaring the investigation ongoing. But that came to an abrupt end when the Army declared the flying object a weather balloon, sparking theories of a government cover-up.
If they can't bring down a weather balloon with over 1,500 rounds of anti-aircraft shrapnel, 12-pound weaponry, what are they going to do against a real enemy target? That's what they decided. What do we do? Do we tell the American and the world public there is something among us that we cannot bring down, we cannot control, we don't know where they're from, and we don't know what they're doing here? No, they didn't want to say that. So the next best thing to do was to just officially deny their existence. That's when the first official denial on UFOs started.
So what did happen that February night? The government stands by its claim that it was a weather balloon. But skeptics still say it was the first in a long line of UFO cover-ups. For MSNBC.com, I'm Dara Brown.
Clear that many people were working on various types of aircraft. What is not so clear is the degree of technological advancement that was made by the Germans leading up to and during World War II. From mysterious floating objects, famously called Foo Fighters, to elusive flying discs, infamously called saucers. Probably the most notorious incident involving flying saucers happened in 1952, over the White House, filmed and reported on, but then quickly forgotten. What were those craft, just years after the supposed end of World War II? And I say supposed because if the war ended in 1945, what were we doing sending military armadas to invade Antarctica in 1946? And then there's the whole Roswell incident in 1947.
The crafts were named Brill, and Brill in Germanic language means the life force. Basically, craft utilizing the never exhaustible, always automatically replenishable life force. And then in a book on Asian occult, German occult traditions, they had a chart of the runic characters, and this is the runic character for the life force. So it all drives together. The name of the craft, Vril, the meaning of the word Vril, and the pictorial symbol on the bottom all mean the same thing, the life force. So we were able to decipher this little puzzle here. 17 of the Vrils were produced. Quite probably they were tested quietly, low-key testing, and then they were flown to the German South Polar colony. We will talk about it in detail pretty soon. And these are low-level photographs, the first real photographs of such craft in low-level flights over the testing grounds in Germany. It's probably the autumn of 1944. The leaves are gone from the trees. In this photograph, we can see the head of the pilot through the transparent perspex cupola of the craft. A very steep maneuver. Possibly the craft is moving in this direction upward because of all the edges, these and these edges are blurred. This happens usually with the edges, with the attacking and the trailing edge of the craft.
What are those lines on the moon?
Parts of the drive. In this enlarged photograph, we see an even better picture of the pilot inside. These two dark spots here could be the sunglasses that the pilot was wearing. The craft could go 2,900 kilometers in the atmosphere, almost two times the speed of sound. It definitely had the exoatmospheric and orbital capabilities. And I have a suspicion that these were free energy craft that did not need any fuel to fly. Once they were started and put in motion, I mean their gravity drives were activated, they did not need any more fuel to run. And we can see low-level flights, probably the autumn, early autumn of 44, the leaves are still on the trees. This visible asymmetricity here, if we divide a craft, it looks like the cabin has been blown backward by a strong wind, or it's kind of a cake melting in our refrigerator, just taken out of the fridge. Bigger craft, the Honeywell 2 type craft, which were 25 meter diameter, about 75 meter diameter tank killers, were also produced. They had one big drive, a ball in the middle, which was a tachyon drive, an electromagneto-gravitic drive, which they were calling the tachyon drives. The Thule tachyonators. The Thule tachyon drives were produced on assembly lines. They had an assembly line production of tachyon drives in their AEG and Siemens plants in 44 and 45. So in these underground caverns, they had more than enough space and fantasy and guts to build all these incredible flying machines. Armaments were added. These are machine guns in three turrets. On this photograph, we see some of the armaments here clearly visible. Something is sticking menacingly from the underside of the craft. A shot from the underside shows the Luftwaffe cross, either the four legs or four small machine gun turrets, and something that looks very suspicious, something here that we would see very soon resembles like a tank turret with a gun sticking out. These were really the tank killers of the Honeywell 2 type. They were designed to fight whole tank armies. The skeptics would say, well, it's impossible to, what a stupid idea, it's impossible to put a tank turret on a saucer because it would never lift off. A tank turret is about 10-15 tons. It's alone is two-thirds or maybe half the weight of the tank. However, the Germans claimed that these craft were 100 tons in weight, armed with brute steel plates. They did not have developed at the time the force field shields around the craft that they developed later on. That's why they were relying on brute steel armor.
All the wars have been planned, financed, organized, orchestrated, managed, and run by a script, like a Hollywood film production is run by a script, by the secret societies and the bankers behind them.
If anti-gravity and free energy technology exists, as some have claimed, then why is it being kept secret? Could there really be a breakaway civilization that uses such technology, or a secret space force, as some eyewitnesses have claimed? And if so, how would the government go about disclosing any of this, assuming that's what they wanted to do?
The USA already has the Army, the Navy, the Coast Guard, the Marine Corps, and there's the US Air Force. But Donald Trump says that there's one potential conflict zone that's been too long neglected.
Very importantly, I'm hereby directing the Department of Defense and Pentagon to establish a Space Force as the sixth branch of the armed forces. That's a big statement.
A new division of the U.S. military dedicated to waging extraterrestrial battles. And when it comes to finding a name for it, Hollywood is full of inspiration.
Now the youth of tomorrow must travel across the stars to defend our world.
All right, people, on the ready line. Are you me?
Yeah!
Let's see if we can get some new ideas from the streets of New York.
Could be anything.
Denalia.
Call it Space Corps.
U.S. Space Force.
U.S. Star Elite Force.
Twitter has gone wild ever since Donald Trump made the announcement. Folks online are even taking a stab at designing the logo. But here's a question. Who exactly will the Space Forces be fighting against, you know, up in the great beyond?
It's not enough that we're fighting with everybody that loves us. We're now going to fight in space.
Unless they're clearing up, like, the space junk that's, like, in the orbit, probably that, but nothing else, like, aliens-wise.
First, you got to find, life in outer space.
Trump says this won't just be any intergalactic fighting force. It'll be number one.
When it comes to defending America, it is not enough to merely have an American presence in space. We must have American dominance in space. So important.
Now, if Hollywood has taught us anything, it's that Trump is going to have plenty of competitors. Caleb Maupin, RT, New York.
Please let me know what you think in the comments. My name is Robert Sepper. Thank you for listening. Have a safe weekend, and I will see you next time.